So I'm opening up this interview with Shane Connor because our subject tonight is the truth about surviving a nuclear blast. And Shane is CEO of KI4U.com and NukeAlert.com. Shane, I've bought products from your company years ago, and so I'm aware of your company. I think most people assume that if there is a nuclear detonation, life is over. There's not going to be any survivors. Is that a real scenario, or is that a myth?
Well, Rick, it's a real scenario in that that is most people's perception. And it will be a self-fulfilling scenario in that, because of that, people are not looking for solutions. In other words, they think that it's futile to try to prepare. If anything nuclear happens, everybody's going to die, or it'll be so bad you wish you had. And this is false. And this keeps people from looking at the viable solutions that are out there. And it need not be true. Many millions of people will perish needlessly for lack of knowledge. Not so much the products we or other people sell, but just for the free information that's available out there that will show them how to survive this. There's actually an awful lot of good news here, Rick, when people dig into it a little bit. This stuff really is survivable because the odds of you being at a ground zero are very, very small. And we know this. We do business with the Department of Defense and FEMA and Department of Homeland Security and many state agencies also, and we have for years. And we know from tests they've done, studies rather, for instance, National Planning Scenario Number 1. This was originally a confidential internal 2004 study by the Department of Homeland Security. And they took a look at what the effects of a terrorist nuclear weapon going off in Washington, D.C. would be, what it would do. And they looked at a 10-kiloton nuke. This would be in the neighborhood of the suitcase nuke or something that would fit in the back of a van if somebody built one. What kind of damage would it do? Now, a 10-kiloton nuke is about the size of the Hiroshima bomb, just to give everybody an idea of what we're talking about. If that went off midway between Congress and the White House, you'd be looking at about 15,000 immediate deaths and another 15,000 casualties from the initial blast and the initial radiation from that. Now, as horrific as those numbers are, it would be a terrible devastation, but as bad as it is, what people don't realize is that over 99% of the population there in the Washington, D.C. area would have had just survived it. In other words, the odds of you being at ground zero are less than 1% in this example right here. But this is very important.
Shane, if a 10-kiloton bomb went off in downtown Washington near the White House or the U.S. Capitol, once you get outside of the immediate radius of the ground zero detonation, what will the people living and working in D.C., what will they be facing at that, you know, within the immediate minutes after such a blast?
Well, the big thing that the same report pointed out, which is true and it verifies all the other studies too, is that you'd also be looking at, because of the population density, about 250,000 people would then be at risk immediately downwind as the fallout was blown their way. And as big as those numbers are, if those people had been pre-trained via civil defense or learning on their own, which is what we push because we're not waiting for civil defense to get turned back on, you're looking at the majority of those people could save themselves. They could either exit the area just moving crosswise to the wind blowing the fallout towards them, which, by the way, would only be about 4 miles wide, 40 miles downwind. And if you're talking a 10-mile-per-hour wind, you're talking 4 hours to walk 2 miles to be out from under it if you knew to do it. And if you're stuck...
So people literally could, on foot,
That's right.
Get themselves away from the radiation.
If they know what to do, and we can't count on the government telling people what to do, because you're going to have the mass confusion. They don't know exactly what they're dealing with, and then they've got to get the word out to people, and people have to be listening. And you're, a lot of people are going to miss the news to head, you know, crosswise to where the bomb blast was.
Oh, okay, let's try to create a scenario. Let's say you are visiting Washington, D.C. You're within, what would be the 5 miles away from ground zero? Would that be safe?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Let's say you're 5 miles, you know, 20, 30 blocks away from the Capitol. You hear the explosion. You hear the sirens. You hear the emergency broadcast alert. You're in heavy traffic. You're in Washington, D.C. What would you do at that moment?
If you're not immediately downwind, and what we need to understand is immediately downwind is just going to be a couple degrees of the compass rose. In other words, it's a thin pizza slice away from the blast zone that needs to immediately exit out of the area. Everybody else that's around it, if they're at home or at another safe place, they could stay put instead of, but most people won't. Everybody's going to jump in their cars and they're going to be stuck in gridlock, you know? But if you're in a vehicle and you're a couple miles away from where it happened, if the wind is not blowing towards you, just move away from the blast area, or you could hunker down where you are because the wind is blowing the fallout away from you.
And okay, let's say you are downwind from the blast area, and there's massive gridlock, and people are panicking. You can't move your car. What would you do?
Get out of the car. You're going to have to get out of the car. If you see this big mushroom cloud rising up, and the wind is shearing off the top of it, so it's pointing towards you, which is what it will do. The wind will this cloud will be very visible. And if it's shearing off and it's aiming towards you, you need to get out of your car. If it's far enough away, you're going to be walking, not towards it, obviously, not directly away from it, but to the left or to the right of it. And if it's too close where the fallout is going to start falling in your area, and this up close, this would be dust that you could actually see, then you have to go to ground, which means you go into a building. And if it's a high-rise type building, you go up to the middle floors and into the middle part of the building. If you can go to the basement, even better. If you can go to a parking garage, if you can go somewhere where you can get a lot of mass between you and the outside where the fallout will be falling, that's where you're going to have to spend.
How about a subway tunnel?
I'm sorry?
A subway tunnel?
Subway tunnel would be good.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And
so we obviously, you don't want to walk towards the cloud, and you don't want to walk away from the cloud. You want to go to the right or left.
You want to go. You want to go across
the direction of the cloud.
You want to go crosswise.
Yes.
And if it's 10 miles away, and we have a 10 mile per hour wind, you've got an hour that even if you were, you know, right in the middle of the path, you've got an hour to really only have to move about a mile. And you're going
let's
to be
say,
out from under it before
say,
it gets there.
Shane, let's say it is an extremely windy day. Conditions are not good. Now you're stuck in traffic. What do you do now?
You got to get out of that car. You can't sit in the car. You've got to find some place where you can get shelter. And
so you don't even try, at that point, you wouldn't try to walk because the wind is too fast. You just got to get shelter.
Yeah, you get out of the car and you go look for any kind of shelter that you can get into that's going to put distance between you and the fallout. And preferably that would be a building where you can go downstairs, but failing that, any building that's six stories or higher, if you can go up into the middle floors and get into the middle of the building, the fallout will fall way down on the ground level, and it will fall way up on the roof, which is still going to be three or more floors away from you. You've given it distance, and you've also given it mass between you. Okay?
Yes, okay.
Now,
the reason for going into the center of the building is because of the fallout is going to the ground and to the roof.
That's correct. And you're giving yourself maximum distance, and maximum shielding by all of those additional floors between you above and below. And you, if you're right up close to the blast, this isn't going to do you much good if you got a building where all the windows are blown in. We're talking an intact building where you would do this. And a thing that a lot of people don't understand is that radioactive fallout, for as deadly as it initially is, it's giving off a lot of energy. That's why it is so deadly. But that also means it's getting weaker very quickly. And specifically, what we're talking about is within 7 hours, that radioactive fallout is only one-tenth as strong as it was initially. And in an additional sevenfold increase in time, 7 times 7, 49, or about 2 days later, it's only one-one-hundredth as deadly as it was originally. So when we talk about preparing, whether it's at home or you are stuck on the road, we're not talking about hunkering down for weeks on end.
So if you can survive for 48 hours, most likely you've got this thing beat.
That's absolutely right. Two or 3 days. And this is more of the good news that people don't understand. The majority of people, if they know what to do, they're going to be able to exit where the fallout is coming before it gets there. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The majority of people won't have to do anything because the wind's not blowing it right directly towards them. They need to stay home and stay off of the interstate highway system that's now turned into a demolition derby. They need to stay put right where they are.
Okay.
But for
Trevor, do you have a question you want to ask Shane?
Well, that was my main concern, is how long should someone stay put? But you're saying 2 to 3 days. Is there anything else we could expect after such an explosion? What other kind of changes would be going on with government or communications? Do you have any way of knowing that?
No, that's an excellent question. You can assume a Katrina type situation. The government does not have the resources available, even with the best of intentions, that they're going to be able to extract everybody from the situation immediately. We all have homes, and hopefully when the music stops, that's the chair that we'll be close to, or the majority of our family will be, and we need to have prepared there at home. And, you know, you can go 3 minutes without air and 3 days without water, but, you know, and 3 weeks without food. So the primary concern, assuming air, is water. Water's the thing that we all take for granted, and you can actually be looking at coma and death if you don't have fresh water for 3 straight days. You can be history, and this is one of the most overlooked, simple things that we can do at our homes to go ahead and have sufficient water. And you cannot store too much water. And you're going to be looking at a disruption of services, electrical, heating, cooling in the summer, every kind of energy, every kind of communication, lack of water, and you're probably going to have a breakdown in society. As we saw down in Katrina, myself and my sons, we actually went down in there and delivering food, and we had to go down there armed, and they were shooting a couple streets over, and people panic. We don't have as many people today built of the self-reliant stuff that our grandparents were. And we can't just look back at the last depression and assume that people are going to automatically, everybody's going to act correctly.
Well, we don't have the moral foundation of this nation anymore.
Exactly.
So it will be every man for himself.
Yeah.
Hey, going back to our earlier scenario, what if, you know, if you're caught in such a nuclear nightmare and you're traveling, should our listeners always be carrying an emergency pack in their car?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And especially the women, if your job has you in high heels a lot, it's nutty not to have a pair of walking boots or at least sneakers in a pack in the back of the vehicle. And you need water, and you can go for $2 at Walmart. You can pick up some protective dust masks. And you can pick up, for a couple dollars, you can pick up a parka, just a poncho, a real cheap plastic poncho. And if you are caught in the fallout a little bit as you're exiting it or getting into a building or something, as quick as you get inside, you can throw that parka off, and now you don't have the stuff in your hair and everything else. And
is that Shane? Is that a parka? Is that enough to shield us from radiation?
It shields you from the contamination. It doesn't provide any barrier protection. It's not like a lead suit or something, which, all that's going to do is you're going to be able to cover up your whole top half of your body there, and when you are able to get to a safe place, you can just strip it off and throw it away, leave it. You don't have to. You can just discard it because you only spent a couple dollars for it, and now you do not have radioactive fallout contamination in your hair that you have to wash out, et cetera, et cetera. So, what we're talking about is just a couple of little items.
Yeah, you're talking about a $5 plastic parka.
Yeah, I'm talking the cheapest ones. Get more than one. You don't know who's going to be driving with you that day.
Right.
And get the dust protector mask. You know, radioactive fallout, we're not talking about a gas here where you need a gas mask. We're talking about dust. And it's radioactive. You got to keep it out of your lungs, and you throw the dust protector mask on, and you've done it in a very major way. Obviously, the greatest fallout shelter in the world and the best safest place is to get these someplace where you don't need one. But if you are caught out in it, this is a very inexpensive kit that everybody should have in the back of their vehicle. You should also have a portable radio with fresh batteries and extra batteries in there too, so that you can hear what's going on. The cell phones may all be down, but maybe we can get an AM station up in the area soon that'll tell you when it's safe to come out or what areas they're extracting people out of next, that sort of thing.
See, so, I heard after Katrina that I heard some local emergency official in Louisiana said that he thought most of the people who died in New Orleans by flooding, they died because of lack of a radio. He said if they'd had a radio, they would have heard that the levees had broken. And what the people did is that they went up into their attic to get away from the rising water, and they didn't know that the levees had broke. And he said, They were trapped in that attic space.
Yeah, and
if they just had a radio, they would have heard the warning.
Yeah, and for lack of an axe, they couldn't cut themselves out of the roof.
That's right. They couldn't get out.
Yeah, yeah.
They ended up drowning. We've got about 6-7 minutes here. What about what does the homeowner need? What kind of emergency supplies should be in every home?
Well, water's the first thing. You make the assumption that all utilities, all services will be non-existent after this happens. So we're talking, again, water's your top thing. And then food. You can go about 3 weeks miserably without food, but we want food for everybody also. If you have a basement in your home, if you live in a part of the country where you do, you can very easily, very quickly, make a fallout shelter in that basement and safely stay at home. You can also do it with a home that's above ground in a center room. It just takes a little bit more mass to do so. We tell people exactly how to do this in a free 8-page report that's got over 1,000 links with Google now all over the Internet.
And how can they get it, Shane?
It's free on our website. It's ki4u.com, and it's the letter K, the letter I, the numeral 4, and the letter U.com. It's right in the center of the first page that opens up. And we also have our other article that's been widely republished. It's called The Good News About Nuclear Destruction. And for all of your friends, neighbors, and relatives that you want to wake up to the need to prepare, have them read that first. It will then point them to the 8-page guide on how to do it after it shows them that it's worth doing.
Shane, what about are there any type of protective I'm trying to think of medicine is not the word, potassium iodide. What can people do to protect themselves?
Sure. We sell the potassium iodide, and you'll see that over at our website also. We also show people on our website how they can also apply a dose through regular tincture of iodine or antiseptic iodine that you'd find at the local pharmacy, too.
How soon after a nuclear detonation do people need to get the potassium iodide in their body?
You need to have it, you need to have ingested it 30 minutes prior to being exposed to the radioactive fallout, okay? Now, if you take it afterwards, it will still do you some good, but you'll get almost 100% protection if you take it before. But let me explain real quick. Potassium iodide is not any kind of magic anti-radiation pill. It only protects you against radioactive iodine, but that is a major constituent of either a nuclear power plant accident like in Chernobyl or a terrorist for real nuclear weapon. So it does take care of a major problem downwind. In fact, kids have gotten thyroid cancer from Chernobyl 500 kilometers downwind. That's like 315 miles downwind from Chernobyl that didn't have the potassium iodide. They ended up with thyroid cancer.
Sandy, the potassium iodide is basically protecting the thyroid gland from accumulating an excessive amount of radiation.
Yes. What it is the thyroid gland is an iodine sponge, and what we do with taking the potassium iodide is we fill it up, we saturate it with good, safe, stable iodine. Then if you later inhale or ingest radioactive iodine, it has nowhere to go, and your kidneys will simply eliminate it right out of your body, go in one end and out the other. And
is there a shelf life on the potassium iodine?
There is, and the FDA has extended it. In other words, people were suppliers were putting 3 years and 5 years on it, and the FDA said, hey, if you've got it, because they bought a lot of it. They bought a lot of it from us after 9/11. And they don't want to throw it out. They know that it's still good. And we document that on our website. We've got a very complete website on KI and what it does and what it doesn't do. People need to understand.
Is there any way that we store it that can harm the effectiveness?
Well, you want to go ahead and not open the bottle until you need it just to keep moisture from getting into the tablets. And you also don't want to keep the bottle in your glove box, you know, during the hot summer. You don't want it to get too hot. Keep it at room temperature and keep the bottle closed until you need to use it. And it's going to be good for, you know, 6 to 8 years or more. And we document that on our website from government tests.
Shane, in the closing minutes here, what do you make of, the last, 6-8 weeks, there's been a steady drumbeat coming out of Great Britain and Washington that we can expect some type of major terrorist attack possibly this summer. What do you think's going on?
Yeah, Rick, I'm only surprised it hasn't happened already. There's much nuclear stuff out there and stuff that's loose. We're a licensed radiological laboratory right here. We understand the security involved with it, and also the lapses in it. And I think it's absolutely inevitable that we're going to see something nuclear in our future. I've got kids, too. I hope I'm dead wrong. I wish there's no need for any of the products we sold for my kids' sake. But I'm afraid we are going to see nuclear problems. A lot of people don't want to face it because they don't believe it's survivable. It's kind of like talking about an asteroid that would destroy all life on Earth. Why think about it? I mean, if it happens, I can't do anything about it. And that's not true. When people dig into this, there's a ton of good news about nuclear crises and destruction here in this country. This stuff is survivable for the majority of Americans if they will get educated on what to do. It's so great to be able to know that your family can survive this stuff.
If a small nuke went off in a major U.S. city, how long would that? How big of an area? I know it depends. Let's say a 10-kiloton. How big of an area would be affected, and how long would that area be uninhabitable?
the immediate ground zero area, a 10 kiloton nuke, you'd probably have for a mile around. That's just going to be a no-go zone for who knows how long. Downwind, you're talking, maybe 120 miles. That is going to be an area of concern, but it's going to be re-inhabitable, within a couple months. The longer problem that people are going to have, the majority of people are going to have, is going to be the disruption of services. The world will never be as it used to be. Stores are all just in time. The pallets come in at night for your local big grocery store, and people are going to panic because they hadn't prepared, and everything's going to get wiped out. And if you haven't done what you need to do for your family in advance, and let me tell you a great thing about a lot of the preparation things that you would put aside. If, heaven forbid, nothing bad ever did happen, no hurricanes, no earthquakes, no nothing where you had to make use of it, most of the stuff we're talking about socking away, you can always use it. You can always use that toilet paper. You can always go ahead and eat the food. It's not wasted money, and hopefully if you bought it in bulk, you save some money buying it, Costco or Sam's, or, you bought in large quantities, or you bought as a church. And got
I've always told people, saying, just buy food that you're going to eat anyhow.
Bingo, that's it. This is so simple. And back during the last depression and back in our grandparents' day, 90% of the population was rural. They had a huge pantry because they had to put aside enough food to hold over till the next harvest.
Shane, I've used this analogy many times on this radio program. My grandparents were born in 1896. They passed away a number of years ago, but they were born in 1896. William McKinley was president of the United States.
Wow.
All right, in their lifetime, they saw the Spanish-American War. They saw World War I, the Spanish flu pandemic. They saw the Great Depression, World War II, the Cold War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
All in their lifetime. And the thing that I realized thinking back on my grandmother and grandfather was I thought about their pantry. It was actually the basement of their house. It was full of canned vegetables and fruits. They had cured meats. They had everything they needed. And so for them, for us to have this kind of a conversation, they would have been, if they were alive today, they would be saying, well, I don't understand why you don't have a pantry full of food anyhow.
Absolutely. And people today, I mean, if they don't go to the grocery store every single week, I mean, they're out of luck.
How about every day?
Yes,
I know a lot of people that go day by day.
No, I know it. And the thing is, these stores, as plentiful as they are today, and nobody has any excuse not to go ahead and load up on some extra food right now. When something happens, I mean, I've been in blizzards, and I know friends in earthquakes, and I was down there at the Katrina deal, and I'll tell you, stores get wiped out in a heartbeat. I mean, within a couple hours, there's nothing edible on the shelf. And if you got a family you're responsible for, it's irresponsible to know what you know and not to have taken some action.
Especially after what we all saw on national TV during the Katrina crisis.
Absolutely.
It was bone-chilling.
Yeah, not
to watch the chaos that was happening
in
New Orleans.
No, and I'll give you another example, too. Hurricane Rita shortly thereafter here in Gonzales, I had to go down to the coast, and I had my sons here. They had everything they needed, and I said, listen, load up, top off the water, and go ahead and top off the fuel for all of your vehicles, just in case the hurricane comes here. Now, the hurricane didn't. It passed, way down by Houston, 3 hours away. And the blue skies here, no rain, no wind, nothing. But you know what? This whole town here in Gonzales, Texas, was overrun by the refugees from the coast. You couldn't move through town. Sonic, McDonald's, HEB, the big grocery store, everything was sold out, and you couldn't move through town. No more gas, nothing. They got hit with it. Even just from the refugees.
Yes.
And no storm. So people, we need to remind people of this. Even if it doesn't happen right in your own backyard, you're going to have a disruption of services by, you know.
Yeah, that's a really good point. A lot of our listeners on this radio program live in the country and in small towns, and they're thinking, hey, I'm out here, I'm away from the city. Well, what they're not thinking about is the city is going to come to them.
Bingo. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you have to be more than a full tank of gas away from any major city. And there's a lot of people that can't say that. There's a lot of your listeners that can't say that they're a full tank of gas away from every major city.
Hey, Shane, my daughter Chris was on the line. She will tell you, Carissa, how many times does your dad tell everybody in the family, keep the gas tank full?
Constantly.
Constantly.
All the time.
I'm always reminding everyone in the family, don't ride around, you know, on an eighth of a tank of gasoline. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You never know when you've got to just hit the road and go.
Yeah. And you know, most of us have regular routines as far as where we go to school, where we go to work, the things that we do when we're away from home. And everybody in the family needs to know and be told, if something happens, coming or going, here's where you're going to go. Here's where we're going to meet up. Here's where we're going to be looking for you. And because you have to assume that the cell phones are going to be down, or when something happens, even if they're up, you can't get through because you've got, you know, 100 times more people all calling at once. So you have to have all of this planned out for your regular routes. And we even do it to the point that if a nuke did go off in San Antonio or Houston or Austin, I mean, we're surrounded by all three of those major cities where I live, that we've got places to go that if the music stopped, and we do it like the old kids game, if the music stopped right now, where's the closest chair you're going to get into? And we've got places, I mean, the worst of them is, you know, a culvert under the road or something.
Yes.
But we've got buildings that we would go to, friends that we would go to, wherever the music stops.
That's another thing that I've always encouraged people to do is have an emergency plan that everybody in your family knows the plan, because in our, you know, our fast paced lifestyle, we're not all together all the time. And you know, what if, you know, you're at one location, your wife is 30 miles away, your children are someplace else with a school event or something like that. Where does everybody know where you're going to meet?
That's right.
And where you're headed. Do you have an emergency hideaway?
Yep.
If you all have to absolutely get out of that city.
Yep.
And do you know where to go?
And as dire as this whole conversation is, you know, with you know, as serious as all of this is, you know, we're not looking to obsess over any of this. This is like insurance. You know, you get medical insurance, and you don't look forward to a time to see how well it works on your kids.
Yeah, you hope you never use it.
Right, but it's the peace of mind. So you put aside some of these supplies. You figure out what you're going to do. Our 8-page report will show you how to throw together a fallout shelter in your basement or upstairs in your home very quickly. If you've got the information already at hand, you know how to do all these things, and then go on and enjoy your life and enjoy your kids and your family. And again, we don't obsess over this. We just take care of business like insurance, and then hope and pray that God's mercy will carry on. And you know,
say a couple of years ago, Homeland Security, you know, they told the American people everybody needs to get a roll of duct tape.
Right.
You know, and Home Depot and Lowe's sold out of duct tape within 2 hours. They didn't tell the people what to do with the duct tape.
No.
So everybody had duct tape.
Yeah. No, I know it. And they got chided for that pretty badly, and they're going to be very hesitant giving future alarms, because they don't want to be brought up short on it again, because they caught a lot of grief for doing that the way they did it. And I'm concerned that you know, a lot of people if you get advance notice of something going on and you're in a major city, you just need to gather up the kids and go visit that aunt out in the country. I mean, you just need to go up and leave until things sort themselves out a little bit. You're not going to get out of the major cities when something happens. It's going to be locked down. And, you know, we go to some of these conventions with Department of Army and Homeland Security, and where these top people talk about what they're going to do. And their focus for too long, now they're shifting gears. The beginning of this year we saw them starting to shift gears, but it's like turning the Titanic. But their primary concern for Homeland Security has been two missions. Interdiction, try to stop stuff at the border or find it here before it goes off. And number two was continuity of government for when number one fails. In other words, keeping the government going. And they left off number three, which is civil defense for the people.
Shane, we're down there. That's our closing minutes. We got 2 minutes here. Several months ago, May 9th, President Bush signed two presidential directives, basically granting to himself to law power. Quickly, in 1 minute, do you think that's a signal to the American people that they expect something catastrophic to happen very soon?
Absolutely. Look, we deal with these people in selling them product and consulting, and to a man, they're all telling us it is not a matter of if anymore; it's a matter of when. We're going to see nuclear terrorism here in this country, and you have to have prepared on your own, because there's not time for them to do what they should have been doing, which is a full civil defense program.
Okay, our guest today has been Shane Connor. Shane, one more time, give out your website.
It's ki4u.com, the letter K, the letter I, the numeral 4, and the letter U.com. A lot of free information on there.